It's all music. Actually, this is Common and Bob. Heard the melody go.
Oh, yeah. Just in the bass?
Yeah. There's that chord from earlier today. Two roots, or one root at least. At least one root.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
There it is.
We don't want that note. Selective grab on the right hand.
You know, most cycles, they just keep going.
I know.
I should have rephrased. I should have said, you've heard that stuff, and maybe it's appealing to your ear.
Very much so, yeah.
Let's see if I can put that in perspective. We came out of... We hit our one chord.
That's the there it is. I know it's in there.
Now when the melody's ringing upstairs, switch to our five.
Five with a seven in the bass?
Yep.
But it's you're great. Adding something
else? Version day at the corral here. No, nothing. Just letting that ring upstairs.
Oh. Okay,
want a third in that chord. Right, once again.
Keep ringing, please.
Go there real fast. With the third in there. Once again. That's the sound.
Okay.
Now that normally, when you play an unprepared seven, it's more Beethoven and Mozart than it is Bach. The bass would keep going, bom, bom, down to, can you hear that that's logical for that? You can feel that?
So, oh, yeah.
So, here's a trick to get us out of trouble. And it begins a long cycle. We can't get the low resolution we want, so we use misdirection. It's not always a bad thing. Convert the bass note and its tendency. We convert the bass note's function. Now it's the seven of the G. G7, which is three, the five is six.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is the third in the bass, not the five of two. Or we'll call it six dominant. And I went up here and...
Wait a minute. Five of two...
is six dominant seven.
We're still in E flat.
Right. Forever. Passage that we're going to do.
I'm not clear on that.
Okay.
We went from a 5-7 chord
to the 5-6. How about if I say 3 dominant 7? Because that's how I'm really thinking.
To 3 dominant 7.
Let's use. Okay.
Oh, yeah, you're using all
your. You got to watch out, too, because if you add this note, I heard you adding that. Add that on purpose again, the E flat. Now you're applying a chord that I wonder what Bach would have to say. I'd pay a pretty penny to know what he would think about that. Because it doesn't show up in his music, you know. We don't hear him doing this stuff.
What was that, sharp 11 chord?
Yeah. 13 raised 11.
13 raised 11. Yeah. We don't want that note though. And so that's a 3-7 or the 5-6.
Good.
So we're going to 6 with a third in the bass.
Excellent.
Got it, okay.
Now we're going to take this chord before its duration is up, because we're out of bass notes.
Uh-huh.
So we have to use misdirection again and get our ear focused up here. So we'll play C.
We want a two chord.
No, I'm going to stay on the same root tone before I switch. See, because if you do this, it's not as usually as musical as to switch the bass before you begin your next root tone or next bass tone.
So we're just using
relocating
inversion of the bass up here, doing one of these.
See, what we're doing is we're transferring the octave. So it's still C7.
And you're playing a C7 chord like a... Oh, okay.
Okay, now this note can stay. traps. We go 3, 6.
Two.
Great. Two dominant seven. Inside strings. Great. Five. Like the six was.
Same one. Same
sure.
Word.
Five note chord. Right. One, seven. Seven inner strings.
What's the bass note? I'll just. Oh.
Right. This is our seven half diminished chord. Six of E flat is.
But you're not playing it like that, you're playing.
See our bass note went. We'll make it dominant on the lower four strings actually. Is a musical melody, not a voice-led melody. Meaning, way back here. Keep your cycles going forever.
Uh-huh.
And eventually bail out or do something different.
Well, you know, I think that's enough material for me to work with the tape and follow it through, you know. It is, I'm sure a lot of this kind of thing is in that section of the book.
It just doesn't get into the chromatics. That's one reason I dwelt on this. It's all diatonic.
Oh, I
like
see.
Like if we had started here, that's all that I showed, and it would have gone with the little decorative tones, then it would have gone. Stay diatonic all the way, I guess, because it doesn't say anywhere.
So the variation we're throwing in is going to straight seven.
All kinds of dominants. It's replacing minors and or majors, too.
Right, but
tons of dominants.
The net result of using chromatics is that instead of a little
major.
Bit more uncomfortable voicings with major sevenths in the bass, we're using the seventh, dominant seventh.
Kind of the opposite, Kevin, no, not meaning to be ornery. It's, we're using them to avoid. It's not the result of. Maybe this is what you're saying too, if you are.
Might be.
the reason that we even started doing it was to avoid some of this.
Uh-huh.
And it was to inject some interesting surprises, like. Because otherwise we would have had. Which is also lovely. Setting the bass on purpose so you can really hear it on the tape. Delaying it so you can hear it. That's diatonic, etc. Well, we just. Now the ear's really drawn into that funny dissonance. Switch keys now. Went to 5 minor. 5 minor instead of 5-7.
Mm-hmm.
Opens the door to the key of 4 or the key of 2. Like if you went, you got the Beethoven kind of scene. If you go, so 2 minor. Mm-hmm. This chord also opens the door to the key of five. Four.
Now, which is the pivot chord?
5 minor 7 is a chromatic chord in the home key, so it's not a true pivot, but it's the it's the focal point. It's the one that draws our ear in.
And we're in E flat.
Sure. So we hit that E flat minor 7, right, which sets up the 1-7. Yeah, we run out of fingers. We do the best we can. That could take us to the key of 4. It feels like we're at least in the temporary tone center of 4. Oh, I see. Perfect place for the 4 add 9. Remember, up the key, new key now.
Which is 4, the key of 4 or A flat.
Yes, yes. So and it's 4.
The add 9, the blah, blah, blah.
Well, that, no, we hit the 1, the new 1, after that. Follow with its 4, with an add 9 chord, and the root and the bass.
Add 9 chord.
That's it. What's the letter name that we need?
D flat, that's add 9.
You can build it right there.
Boom.
All right, careful now. We can't have 9 so low.
You want 9 up higher?
There it is. Let's hear the 4 notes. No, we can't have 9 so low. That's pretty. That isn't good voice leading, but it's a pretty chord. That's the normal voice leading. That's how your ear might be.
7? No. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Boy.
G minor 7 flat 5.
G minor 7 flat 5.
That's right. 3 dominant 7.
In A
C
flat
7.
3.
Right there? You got it? No, you're right. There. That's it.
Okay, right. I hear a minor chord next. What would it be? A nice minor chord.
This one. This sounds like 4 of the new key. We're going into a minor now. By doing this, this could become the key if we let it. If we follow it with its own 4. B5 minor 6.
Yeah, are you hitting the F?
Just the... Now I'm going to play it first and I'll explain to you what this is. It's pretty dissonant. Heard that kind of sound? That funny dissonance?
Yeah.
It's 2-7/5 in the new key. So that's most of the G7 flat 9. You can add the flat 7 if you feel like it. And here's the 5. So it's 2/5.
So what is the function again?
2-7 with an anticipated bass note, meaning the next chord, the 5 chord. Because we're in F minor now, right? We've established
that. Oh, okay. We're calling that the key now.
Well, see, what happened is, when we hit its own 5, when you do this on a chord, when you play a 5 of something, and then go to that thing, and then follow it with its own 4, you can say that, for that moment, your ear hears that as a key. So,
yeah.
That alone, in the books they say 5-1 is a key. I don't know about that, but 5-1-4, I'd say that's getting there. It doesn't mean we'd have to go there, because surely this chord can go other places. Then, I mean, this can be led as if it's going right back into 4. Like 7 likes to go backwards in the cycle to 4. Right. It's a great move. The books always say don't do 5 to 4. 7 functions as 5, but all I know is that Bach does it.
Yeah.
And the good guys.
It's really considered the upper portion of the dominant 7 chord.
Yeah, so when I hear the... I hear Mendelssohn, Chopin, all those romantic composers love that sound, 5 to 4. You know how you're not supposed to go?
From a very practical standpoint, to a guy, say, who only can play...
Which isn't you, of course.
No, but as far as being hip enough to what these progressions are... I asked you one time, you said you did go out and buy the sheet music, say, for a particular tune that you were hearing a kind of progression that you liked. Uh-huh. Is that the way you go about it?
And then
analyze the sheet music? Yeah, how did you... You know, say I'd never met Ted Green and I don't know anything about thirds in the bass and sevenths in the bass, and I want to go listen to Bach. Is that a logical way to go about it? And
you have to understand his 4-part harmony before you can understand his 2 or 3-part harmony usually, because you won't, not you, anyone, won't be able to accurately assess what it means, what he does. Like right here when he goes, a lot of people wouldn't know what to call this. Bach knows what from his 4-part stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
He uses his... That's one reason we're working in 4 voices today. You've heard this piece, that 2-part thing?
Yeah.
Gets too low here to play 4 voices. If you take it up an octave... hear the harmony. Four, five, five inversion, one, five inversion, new five, and a cadence, four, five. I mean, it's all one, that whole piece is 1, 4, 5. We broke it down a few students. There isn't anything else in there but 1, 4, 5 of different tone centers.
So back to my train of thought.
So what you would do is you study his 4-part stuff first,
uh-huh,
like the chorales.
Okay.
Because then you get unequivocal chords where you won't have so much guesswork.
Uh-huh.
And then you come into these 2-part things and you apply what you've learned about progressions to
And what have you learned about progressions? I mean, if you may understand how to play a piece or several pieces like that, but as far as the actual functions, like the other day you said this was 7 of 5.
See, you can't go wrong if your mind is working and if you're curious and willing to fail more than you succeed, which is part of life,
uh-huh,
in certain areas anyway. You name it every way that's practical and logical, and that eliminates most everything immediately. And then if you have 3 names for something, you say, well, this one would only make sense if this were that. I mean, sometimes instantly you'll be able to...
So it's just a process of scientific analysis and deduction.
That works, you'll see.
Right. Well, yeah, I know that, but I was just curious as to how you got from your curiosity about Bach and applying it to the guitar.
My first analyses are named so badly. When I look at that stuff, I chuckle.
Was this in school?
No, this was just, I got a Les Paul and put all these harpsichord-like filters in, and I got all jazzed about playing Bach on electric guitars.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah, one can misname chords in lute music and 3-part stuff, but when you're in 4 voices, your names will probably be pretty much accurate. It's the functions that are suspicious.
Right.
But when you start to remember 1, 4, and 5, especially progressions like 4, 5, 1, it cuts through so much rubbish.
Right. Really. Like, I don't know how I would know 7 of 5.
7 is only another... It's
other
just
than
5
it's
come
a...
to visit with a sunbonnet. Still 5.
Uh-huh.
So if you know that there's a 5 of 5, then you can have a 7 of 5. It just occasionally replaces 5 of 5.
And that's where they talk about that 7 chord actually being the upper partial.
There you go, because if I go,
can
you play that, please? It's like D9.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Let's see. Gee whiz. I should get to some of this other stuff. Definitely listen to this and work on it.
It's good stuff, man. I mean,
what does this mean? I'm
okay,
gonna hit you with some stuff. When Sunny Gets Blue, we were working on that last time, and there was a couple of chords. The way you open the tune up, It sounded like you went like this.
In that key, huh?
In B.
Oh, in B. And yeah. I play that on the third fret for key B?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, there's your two minor.
That would be it?
Yeah, C sharp minor add 9. That's your
I
5.
I hear that note.
There's your 5, 7, 5, 9.
Okay.
Here's the bass player's note in the bass.
Half step above. Oh, that's your 4 minor, right? There's your flat 7.
Something like that.
Yeah, right. That does it.
Yeah, okay.
2, 5.
So you would actually...
That's 2, 5. Believe it or not, it's a crazy one.
Oh, it's a very nice mood to set right off the top. Sounds like the first 4 chords you played on the tape, and I wasn't really checking out. Anyway, you use the term, the song is very minimal to up-tempo long meter.
Not minimal, amenable.
Amenable.
Do you know that word?
Yeah, okay, it's friendly to...
friendly to long meter up-tempo, meaning double the bottom impulse.
Double
do you
the
know
bottom.
That? You take ballads, any ballad, Misty, anything. All you have to have is a willing partner or partners, if you have the urge to do that. You look over, smile, and change the activity level, double it, instead of... Now each one, instead of getting 2 long beats, it's getting 4 little quick ones.
Okay. Up tempo long meter. Now, what's the long meter?
Long meter means that we have twice as many bars now. Because if this was, if those are considered quarter notes, see, it was probably written as half notes, so that's 1 bar. So it wouldn't be true long meter. But you know how we tend to think of those beats as always being quarter notes, the way we're trained.
Right.
So I call this beat 1, beat 2, beat 3. We double the activity level. I call each of those a beat, so we have 4 beats on the first chord, 4 beats on the second chord.
Oh.
So you'd have twice as many bars.
I see.
But if it's really written in cut time, like it says the C with the thing,
yeah.
Then the half notes are really felt as the beat. So 2 half notes or 4 quarter notes, either 2 of these or 4 of those quarters.
Okay.
It's kind of an interesting
long meter. So
1 meter means twice as many bars.
Okay, so when you convert it to up tempo, you're going along.
It means each chord's going to have its own bar now instead of half a bar. Right, a whole bar of that, and then a whole bar of that, instead of, you know, like both of them in the same bar.
Yeah, oh yeah. That...
Remember now after the 6, yeah, good.
Yeah, we did that thing where you went, let's see. Lost it.
I want to go back though before that chord. When you went 3, and then now where does that chord normally go towards in music? No, I mean in the key of B, where would this chord normally go towards?
Well, it's a flat 3 chord.
And where does flat 3 normally
flat
go?
Flat 6.
For? Well, that's already a substitute.
In a dominant function.
What is flat 3 substituting for?
One diminished or.
It's true. No, people never say that to me, but it's true.
What's
its main reason how it got into music, flat 3, in this setting?
It's going back to 2. It's a turnaround to 2, so
right.
It's a 5 of 2, chromatic,
it
flat
5. It is the 5 of 2. So what is the normal Roman numeral that goes there? Right, what Roman numeral is that?
6.
Right, 6 and flat 3 share the same 2 important notes. Likes to go to 2. Now 2 can be dominant at your own discretion, so.
It's used a lot. Blue Moon does that where it goes like to.
Right. Exactly. Right?
Something like that. Huh?
So if we have 2 dominant, and we know we can play 9th chords, like this is a 9th, right, from this root.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've established that, then you can reinterpret the name of this chord, because that's so many other names.
This 2-7
right.
chord?
Yeah, so instead of calling it C sharp dominant 9, we're now calling it E sharp minor 7-5-5. The reason we do that is because then that opens up a new series of roots. That's why it's there.
This chord went kind of like...
this on 3?
No.
We didn't do that? We didn't go chromatically? We didn't do that?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that, I don't know.
I like that chord.
And a 2 chord.
No, you're playing it differently.
I have an 11 instead of a 5. Double stopping in the middle. Right. Flat 2. It's a special voicing.
Oh. You're hitting all 6 notes?
Yeah.
Cheating with the thumb?
Cheating with the thumb. Actually, no, I just bounce the thumb. I'm not a good thumb cheater.
Yeah,
I like
mean
that.
Right cheating, right hand thumb.
No, I know what you meant. Like a lot of fellas, probably you too, can almost get them at the same time. I just kind of bounce.
How do you mean bounce? The only one? Okay.
But you guys, I mean, I've seen guys make it look or sound close to simultaneous.
Like a pick player would do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That leads you back to... Actually, 3.
I love these voicings.
Big ones, huh? Those are good. Well, your fingers look good on that. That pinky is really coming.
Oh, check this one out. I just got this last week. That in Certain Smile. I don't have it fast yet, but I can finally.
Oh, look at that.
Get
one of the few players I know who can play that. I still
I've
work
been
on
playing
that
it
board.
Like this. Getting from this to that chord is still a slow spot for me. I have to do the tune extremely slow to get there.
That's a good one. Your pinky's really coming along.
It's coming along, yeah. Just from playing, I don't do that. I was doing that for a long time. But this one gives me trouble too, this double stop inside.
How so? Play me the notes separately. How it's supposed to be. That wasn't in the song, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh, minor major 7, that's right.
Yeah.
Now I remember.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. But you know what? You're going to conquer this chord.
I keep playing this thing every day. I like this one. Side of the finger.
Uh-huh.
This is beautiful.
Thanks.
Here it comes.
There's the 5 or 6, the
uh-huh.
6.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then they'll go to flat 6 sometimes, you know? Impossible dream change. Chopin. Yeah. Two chords that love each other. 6 minor, flat 6 major. They're just bonkers, 6. Man. They've been in love ever since.
My romance does that.
Yeah. You could put that in there instead of 4 minor.
Like, my romance would go. No, let's see.
Well, I know what you mean. It's like, here's what you mean. You do it again. What key are you in?
I was in E right then.
So you're talking about what this does?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right out of Chopin. that way.
Yeah, that is a nice sound. That's six minor to flat six major.
Yeah.
I've been picking up on that a lot. Okay, so I got the
next question.
Up-tempo long meter. Hello, cowpokes. Let's see. Open triads. I get that just from working on it. Taking it down symmetrically. Oh, we're going to work on these chords. That's nice.
You know
who
that
is that?
Though?
Is that Gershwin?
Yeah.
Rhapsody?
Rhapsody in Blue. Yeah.
Rhapsody in Blue. Yeah. You know, I heard Lorenzo Almeida one time, a long time ago, at a concert, do a Gershwin break where with the LA4,
okay, yeah,
Bud
Shank,
LA4. Ray
uh-huh.
Brown,
Shelly Mann.
Shelly Mann, when Shelly Mann was with
and
him.
And maybe Chuck DeMonico on bass?
No, it was Ray Brown.
Oh, and Ray, you just said Ray Brown, right.
And he did a Gershwin break, he did that too.
He did Rhapsody in Blue, or did he do the sweeping theme from it?
I remember hearing that.
Oh, so he did that too?
Yeah.
He's a talented guy.
He also did Holiday for Strings. Is that Gershwin?
You know what? When I saw him play, he did Holiday for Strings, and it was the best version of that thing I could possibly imagine. He did a pizzicato thumb.
Yeah,
real muted.
Yeah. Beautiful.
It was great, man. I fell off the chair. I loved it.
Okay. Taking it down so much. But okay, that's what we were doing today. But this thing, this voicing for, you made a comment for a low-voiced vocalist, a symphonic voicing, C minor 11 chord, C sharp minor 11 chord sounding something like this. I don't think I have the fingering right though.
You lost me when you say minor 11.
No, a minor voice, just a minor chord.
Didn't have the third in it? It was minor without a minor?
Maybe. That's again the seventh in the bass. It was on When Sunny Gets Blue, we were talking about, and I said she's got a real low voice. It had this kind of shape to it.
Sure, because when you say low voice, minor 11, 7 in the bass, I only know...
Don't think the 11. I don't think the 11.
How about this? It was this thing. I remember you asking me about this. It went like this. For the tape now. 6th string. 5th string, stretch, skip a string, 3rd string bar, 2nd string pinky.
Okay, it's a broken set.
Yeah, this was what we did, I recall it.
Do you have a pencil?
Pencil or pen?
Pencil, if you have one, doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay, so it's... We're not using the 4th string, it's a broken set. So... That note, and that. Okay. And so that's a fifth in the bass.
Yep.
5, 3, 9?
Yes. Flat seven.
Flat seven. 5, 3, flat seven. 11.
Yes.
It is an 11 chord.
Minor 7-11. No, 9, right? So it's not a full. Here's a generic statement. 11th chords need nines. Be they dominant or minor 11th chords, they have to have nines. Without them, there's 7 11th chords.
Right,
a slight
okay.
distinction. Mm-hmm. John? Jonathan? Up on the ear. I mean, it's astounding.
It is, really.
How do we get from caves to then refining tools enough to make these beautiful things? It's really staggering.
Talking about recording, did you happen to catch that Bill Moyers program last weekend with Joseph Campbell?
No. Who's Joseph Campbell?
Oh, you would love him. I thought about you, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's my man?
All right.
Let's see. Straight on back.
Turning
Okay, so I just had a couple other questions. One was, have you heard this duo Tuck and Patty?
Yes, only a little bit.
I brought the CD, the newer one they just released, and there's a he does Europa, a version of Europa.
Europa?
Carlos Santana did it. It's beautiful sort of minor ballad, and he does a harmonic technique that I can't get. I don't know what he's doing. Could you take 2 seconds and listen to that and see if it rings any bells? You have a CD player, I think.
Oh, it's going to be on that, is it?
Okay. Yeah, it's in my bag right there.
I'll let you find it. Don't need to invade you.
Sure.
I'll remove this water unless you're going to have some.
No, that's fine. Thanks. It's the third track. No, I'm sorry. It's the seventh track.
Okay.
And it's about halfway through the tune, he goes into a solo section. Well, it's all solo.
It could be percussive harmonics, tapping on the board.
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, okay. That's an understandable thing.
I don't really think I've ever worked on it. Seventh track, right? Europa.
Can you see the cover of that, please? He's such a talented guy.
He really is. He studies with that fellow Dave Kramer, or used to, in San Francisco.
I hear a little chime there.
He uses it a lot in his technique. Plays a big fat body L5 style.
A little of this percussion goes a long way for me.
Yeah.
Tone wise, I like it as a spice. He uses it so much. But man, has he got a facility or not? That's what's really impressive about him. He's got so much facility. He sounds sometimes like a funk bass player and a funk guitar player together.
Yeah, he does.
So it's like a percussion player who took a guitar. You know? You know what I mean? It's also
definitely.
That's hard to do, actually. I think I have to respect him for it, even though it's not a sound I'm enamored of doing it so much. He's really good at it.
Voicing the chord with the left hand, fingering it, and just tapping it over that area, 12 frets above?
Yes.
Is that what he's doing? Because I was kind of getting that sound.
Two or three ways you can tap that stuff.
Tuck and Patty.
It's
nice to see a married couple
doing
good things, and the world seems to respect them so much. Look at him, he looks like a little baby, man.
Yeah.
He's really kept his youth. Huh?
My friend Denny, girlfriend of mine, she looked at him, and she's a singer, she really loves, you know, black soul type of feel, and she said they look the same but opposite.
It's like
so you're not attacking in any particular spot.
Yeah,
with the right hand.
It's a vague. See, when I was on D9, I went here because there are more notes too. There's only one straggler here.
Right.
And occasionally I'll sneak it. This side of the first finger, you can bring a couple fingers down. You can do tips like this.
Wow.
You can do this.
That's beautiful.
Got it. There it is. Got it. You know what? With your size of hand, which is much larger than mine, you're going to really get a lot of that.
I like that sound a lot. I think I can work on that.
Yeah.
I've done certain, things like this where you just do that kind of a brush across.
Can you do that on all the chords? I meet people sometimes that can do that on any chord. Look at that.
Sometimes.
I have so much trouble. I have to do it like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just can't. I can't get it. There's nothing back. I'm missing a bone or something.
Oh, really?
You guys just damp it with the heel.
Yeah, I just conform to the shape of the chord with the heel in my hand. And just
the heel, like over here,
strike
right?
It with my first
finger. Do you hit it over here?
Yeah.
Right on the side or on the bottom?
No, along the whole side edge.
This edge?
The long edge of my hand, yeah.
That's wild, man. When I do that, it's just like Larry Curly and Moe visit, you know?
Sometimes better than others.
Anyway, that's the technique.
Okay, yeah. And nice symmetrical bar chord forms probably work better with that than strange type.
But let's say you have something a little weirded out. You can still, if you sound,
you gotta look for it more.
Trouble is, with heavier strings, the higher you go, the more they resist you. The lower you go, the easier it is to get the sound because
right,
the string.
Right.
The higher you go, the more you have to push it farther for it to respond. Uh-huh. But a chord like this, now this is really spread out. Here's the look of this chord. It's way out all the way there. And so if I you still get that note there.
Uh-huh.
But you're right about it's better if the whole thing is compact.
Safer, anyway.
Michael Hedges, you would like if you
I like him a lot,
yeah. This cat's really happy.
That's the New Age group, the Windham Hill group. They all...
Well, yeah, he's on Windham Hill, too. That's right.
Windham Hill Jazz, yeah. They all started integrating that. William Ackerman, he did that.
I haven't heard Will yet. I heard him years
Alex
ago.
Alex DeGrassi
in his first two albums with those tunings. Is uncannily brilliant, man.
Yeah.
I was just so amazed by him. It definitely sounded like two or three guys up there.
Yeah, I liked his stuff a lot. I haven't listened to much of him
for
quite a while.
Most amazed by that guy. And also Pierre Benz's sound is great, too.
Yeah.
He's going to knock you on.
There's a couple young guys around right now, Borelli Legrand.
Yeah, he's more like a Django, fiery single string cat, right?
Yeah.
But he's so young. I mean, I heard he was great
he's
at
like
age
19 years old,
2
yeah.
or something,
yeah.
you know.
Uh-huh. What's he going to be in 10, 20 years?
Well, it's like Mendelssohn writing his first symphony at age 15, and you hear it. And if you know and love Mozart's 40th, for instance, or 41st, and you hear this, and to me, it's what Mozart would have written had he lived. But Mendelssohn was only 15, and you go, Jesus, it took Mozart his whole life, and he was the great genius.
Uh-huh.
And here comes Mendelssohn at age 15. That makes me think he was even stronger in terms of his genius. It was just a different kind. It wasn't as flashy.
But there's an almost intangible element to that that sometimes I think about as far as almost a Darwinian kind of evolution. Who's to say that things progress in such parallel terms in different lifetimes? Perhaps there's a collective wisdom that, you know, transcends eras and things, and somehow certain souls tap into that, and their age makes no difference. You know?
It seems
he came along, and that knowledge had been established in the cosmos.
And he just tapped into it.
At some level. Yeah.
I agree that that could be happening. I'm certainly not against that. What intrigues me is that I might have been sitting there going, gee, this is quite a nice rock, dear. What do you think? And she's going, yeah, it's nice. And this guy's sitting at home, you know, like we're same age as him. We're tripping on a rock, and he's home.
Uh-huh.
Writing down notes because he's a pure channel, you know?
Right, right.
But we haven't had that many geniuses in music. We've had a lot of great composers, but no-